Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio productions from this and many other independent community stations across the country. We bring local stories to a national audience from a different location every week. I'm Emily Corwin from WHUS in Storrs, Connecticut.
What has happened to the people of Gaza is unconscionable.
Today on Sprouts, we hear about the Code Pink Women for Peace delegation to Gaza.
We put out a call to ask people to go, and it's kind of a difficult thing for people to say, I'm going to go to Gaza.
60 people, mostly women, visited Gaza with pink gift baskets and a small amount of aid. It was a trip designed to build bridges and generate hope.
When we visited the Women's Center, you could just tell from the looks in their faces that it meant a lot to them that we were there, just our presence, that we cared enough, because they feel forgotten. Gaza's like one of the most forgotten areas in the world, I think, and misunderstood. So to me, it's very powerful to feel like I can do something small in a concrete way to help their lives.
The delegates worked as citizen diplomats, rallying people from Egypt, Pakistan, Israel, and the U.S., and even Hollywood, to call on the governments of Israel, the U.S., and Egypt to form a lasting peace with the Palestinians and open up Gaza's borders. WHUS Radio's Dory Smith remained in touch with the delegates by phone throughout their journey.
It was a journey many thought would never happen. By the time Code Pink's delegation to Gaza was in the planning stage, Gaza's borders had been completely locked down, and the devastation to civilians was gradual. Israel had imposed a blockade in 2006 after an election that brought Hamas to office. 18 months of this new occupation policy left people without vital food, medicine, and even water. Humanitarian aid organizations and the UN issued public statements of criticism, but still, a series of high-profile aid delegations were denied entry. On December 24th, we aired an interview with the UN Special Rapporteur to Palestine, Richard Falk. He had been detained in an Israeli holding cell after being denied entry to Gaza on UN business.
People like myself who seek to enter and give a credible account of what is happening have increasingly been denied entry.
Falk had been strip searched by Israeli security services and held for 20 hours before he was deported, he believes, over his criticism of Israel's policies. Falk had called the Israeli blockade of Gaza collective punishment.
In Gaza, every child, every old person, every sick person is subject to the effects of this blockade that have restricted the flow of food, fuel, and medical supplies to such an extent that the population is barely able to physically survive. Recent statistics have been showing that over 80% of the Gazan population lives below the UN poverty threshold set at $1 of purchasing power per day, and 46% of the children in Gaza are suffering from acute anemia.
Richard Falk had also called on the ICC, International Criminal Court, to investigate Israel's violations of a truce with Hamas. Israeli politicians had been working hard to contain that part of the story as their elections approached, and many U.S. reports mentioned only that Hamas was violating the ceasefire. It troubled Falk and others that Israeli forces were not willing to negotiate or allow humanitarian aid workers out of Gaza.
They have made it very difficult for qualified observers within Gaza to leave, those who are connected with human rights NGOs or students that have fellowships to study abroad. They've been denied exit permit.
And then came news that the Israeli government had phoned some Gazan civilians to warn them about an impending airstrike. But there was no place to go in Gaza, as IDF, Israeli Defense Force war planes, dropped massive bombs on the tiny Gaza Strip, moving in with tanks. Amnesty International documented Israel's use of illegal white phosphorus on the civilian population. We contacted Middle East expert Phyllis Bennis.
The humanitarian consequences of this invasion are explosive, horrific, and worse than anything we've seen probably since 1967 in the region. The number of people killed on a daily basis is staggering. There's now more than 300 people who are already known dead. 1,300 have been treated at hospitals, treated as best they can, since the hospitals are woefully not just understaffed, but out of medicine, without sufficient access to electricity because of the long siege that Israel has imposed on the Gaza Strip. What's not as clear, because of the way it's being portrayed in the international press, is that the Israeli airstrikes constitute a massive set of violations of international law, the Geneva Conventions, among others. These violations include collective punishment. Granted that at least that rocket fire, which is aimed at civilian cities inside Israel, is indeed illegal, it doesn't give the Israelis the right to punish the entire 1.5 million Gazan citizens, including the 50% of those, 750,000 of whom are children, for the actions of a few militants.
Amid the carnage, a UN school in northern Gaza was struck by Israeli forces, killing about 40 people, many of them children. By mid-January, the UN had been attacked again. John Ging, head of Gaza operations for the UN Relief and Works Agency, said a UN compound in Gaza was bombed 6 times during a 2-hour period. 700 civilians taking shelter there were terrified, and UN food warehouses were set on fire. By early February, Code Pink founder Medea Benjamin managed to get across the border into Gaza to learn more about the consequences of the war.
We went into Gaza in the beginning of February, right after the worst of the Israeli invasion, and we were so distraught by what we saw. Entire sections of the country have been razed in the northern part. In the middle of Gaza City, a very densely populated area, there are entire blocks that have been bombed, not only homes, but schools and hospitals. Humanitarian aid workers have been killed. People whose businesses have been destroyed are struggling now to find a way to make a living. And a very traumatized population, especially among the children.
In a press release, Code Pink issued a call to President Barack Obama, asking him to initiate a new policy on Israel, one that listens to the needs of the Gazan people, does not blindly support Israel, and calls for Israeli leaders to meet with Hamas and lift the blockade of Gaza. They organized a fundraising effort and the delegation that immediately swelled beyond their estimate of 20 people. After signing up 60 people, they had to turn some others away for lack of ability to handle travel arrangements for such a large group. The delegates included several well-known Americans, including Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Alice Walker. Walker spoke to Democracy Now! About the significance of this trip that had been timed to coincide with International Women's Day 2009 on March 8th.
Well, because I really love people, and I wanted to be here with the women who've lost so much in their lives. They've lost their homes, they've lost their children, and they just seem to be people I wanted to spend International Women's Day with.
Other lead members of the Code Pink Women for Peace delegation to Gaza spoke with us by phone as they made their way into Cairo, then Al Arish, a Bedouin town near Rafah, finally crossing into Gaza at the Rafah border crossing. Anne Wright had a distinguished career as a U.S. military colonel and diplomat in many countries before finally resigning her post in protest of George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq in 2003.
I think we all take very seriously our being here, that we do represent so many people who are unsure of what they can do to try to influence the situation, try to stand as a witness to a blockade that is jeopardizing security, that is, I would say, in a violation of international law and humanitarian law, of purposely isolating 1.5 million people, and this has been going on for a year and a half now, to the level that inadequate food, sewage facilities that have not been rebuilt after bombings from times past. Here it is going into a month after the attack that construction materials have not been brought in because of the blockade. People are still living in tents. There's no end in sight for the misery that the civilians that live in Gaza are facing. And so we, in trying to assess, you know, what happens to civilians in times of attacks by other groups, whether it's Hamas or other militant groups that have been firing unguided rockets into the areas around the border with Israel, something that I do deplore. I would plead with Hamas and the other groups not to fire those, because the response from the Israeli military is indiscriminate, in my opinion. They are attacking both militants and civilians and destroying civilian homes. And the civilians have really been taking the brunt of what's been going on. And we would plead with all sides to stop injuring anyone, and particularly the civilians.
By then, the peace delegates had supporters from all over the world following their journey, both online and in person at various stops along the way. And at the Levantine Cultural Center in Los Angeles, supporters cheered the peace delegates on, listened to music, and formed a symbolic bridge between the U.S. and the Middle East.
This is the glasnost for the Palestinians, for the Arab world.
Jordan El Grabali is director of the Levantine Cultural Center in Los Angeles, where they offer literary, performing, and visual arts programs, as well as speakers, to diverse audiences interested in Middle Eastern and North African culture. Their mission is using the arts to create opportunity for dialogue about the Arab-Muslim world.
I mean, it takes these kinds of in-person trips, and Israel doesn't like to open the borders to the outside world. I mean, it so much reminds me of apartheid under South Africa and the condition of life in the Bantustans in the late 70s and early 80s. And the more media attention was being shed on this area, the more things had to open up. You know, it's like glasnost. This is the glasnost for the Palestinians, for the Arab world, that we're seeing that in this particular period. And it's going to make it, you know, a broader range of possibilities the more people go there and they see what's going on. I can tell you about a number of different American Jewish women like Hedy Epstein or Susan Nathan, who, you know, were always very pro-Israel, Zionist supporters, and went there and enjoyed Jerusalem, and they traveled around. As soon as they saw the reality of what was going on in the West Bank and Gaza, and even within the Arab towns in Israel, they had a conscience and they started to talk about it. Now they're touring. And the tide is sort of shifting, in the Jewish American population. You know, they want to be positive and be supportive of Israel, but they don't want to necessarily have their name on these kinds of, you know, attacks, such as we saw in 2006 against Lebanon. I mean, the images of devastation, and that was on a much bigger scale than the Gaza war, but it's a very similar situation. Let's hope that there's a bit of a shift here, that it's not going to be plus ça change, plus ça reste le même, as the French say, you know.
We're listening to the music of Nasser Moussa, a Palestinian-Jordanian oud virtuoso and vocalist who performed at the Levantine Cultural Center at an event set up to create a bridge between L.A. and the Middle East. They were in touch with the Code Pink delegation to Gaza by phone and hosted well-known Hollywood personalities as they raised money for civilians in Gaza. Pacifica Station KPFK in Los Angeles carried portions of the event, and here Niall Al-Wardani described the delegation's itinerary for Don Bastani.
The delegation will be leaving from Cairo in 2 days' time and traveling across land by car and by minibus. They will be going to El Arish in the northern part of the Sinai Peninsula that is inhabited mainly by Bedouins, part of Egypt, as you know, and they're going to the Rafah border.
You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest.
Visit the Code Pink website. It's at codepinkalert.org, and you'll find out a little more about the situation.
KPFK's Don Bastani of Middle East in Focus also hosted Eric Roberts, known for Dark Knight, The Pope of Greenwich Village, and many other TV programs and films. Bastani praised Roberts for speaking out about his concerns for the people of Gaza and asked him if it was difficult for him to get past agents and promoters to be able to do so.
You have to make it inviting for people to want to hear the truth. You can't get hostile and loud and mean about it, or else everybody would just turn away and say he's hostile and mean and loud. Even though he has a point, I don't like how he does it. And it's hard. And what I see happening, especially now, the Gaza situation, as a culture, unfortunately, I see that there's an addiction to violence there. And we have to help eradicate it, you know, before it does spread to the new generation, you know, the 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds, because it's already spread to the teenagers and the young adults. It is an addiction to a violence like any other family addiction. When there's an alcoholic in the family, everybody is affected.
Yeah.
And it's the same tragedy, only it's affecting everybody outside the family because of the violence. Yeah.
Eric, are you talking about the Palestinians or the Jewish Israelis?
Well, both. But when I was speaking of it, I was speaking mostly of the Palestinians. But I'm speaking of both, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it is so unfortunate because it's a culture that calls the other an enemy, but they're alike. And we have to open our eyes and help them open theirs. And the Beatles said it best, all you need is love.
And when an Eric Roberts or a Tim Robbins gets up in public and says these things, mm-hmm. people tend to listen simply because you're an actor and they see you all the time.
And I hope so. It's the very least I can do.
Other Hollywood stars have expressed their dismay at the Gaza war and humanitarian crisis there, including Roseanne Barr, who now has a show at Pacifica Network station KPFK, and Marissa Tomei, Ben Affleck, and the singer Michelle Schacht. Singer Annie Lennox voiced her anger about the Gaza war in London before a huge crowd gathered to protest Israeli policy.
Last week, the death toll was 420. By 3:30 in the afternoon, we were told that the Israeli ground troops were entering Gaza. 1 week later, and the death toll has risen to almost 800. What kind of solution is that for the safe security of Israelis in Israel? I ask you, do you think they are more safe now when their sons and brothers are going into Gaza? Do you think they are safer now when we see the slaughter of millions of children like this? Shall we have to see? How much more killing shall we have to witness until the leaders of the international community wake up and create a lasting ceasefire, resolution, and solution for the appalling situation of the citizens of Gaza? Thank you, and thank you for coming.
We spoke with Pam Rasmussen, a longtime peace activist and Code Pink member. She said she was thrilled to make it into Gaza.
We really sort of, I think down deep, thought maybe we wouldn't get in because so many people have been turned away. But I think there are a couple of factors that really came together to help us. You know, one, the UN invitation to come for International Women's Day. The Red Crescent Society was behind us, and they got First Lady Suzanne Mubarak of Egypt behind them, and she endorsed our coming in. And then, of course, the fact that there were several different groups converging at one time, in addition to ourselves, really put pressure on the Egyptians. It took all those factors to get us in, but I think now that we've gotten in, I think it'll be a lot harder for the Egyptians to keep saying no, now that they sort of opened the spigot a bit. I feel very optimistic that we are like the tip of the battering ram, so to speak. If we keep pushing, in fact, we just had a meeting today with another peace delegation here, and what we're talking about doing is not too long from now, maybe in a month or a month and a half, that we do this again, but we're going to make it even larger and converge on the Egyptians again. And if we keep on doing this and not make it a one-time thing, that they won't be able to keep it closed any longer.
When other delegates left for home, Code Pink's Gail Murphy stayed on in Gaza to document more of the story. News outlets were missing.
And I'm looking into a beautiful orchard, actually, of oranges and olives, and a greenhouse.
We reached her in Beit Hanun.
Above the greenhouse into the sky, I'm looking at a very large, blimp-like object floating in the sky, which I've watched all day, that's spying on all of the population along this sort of frontier section that I think the Israelis want to turn into a buffer zone. We're not far from Israel, and we just came from a neighborhood called Abu Drabo, which was completely demolished. It looks as though an earthquake happened. Some 350 houses were completely destroyed. We spent the entire afternoon getting stories from people who return to this rubble every single day, hoping that internationals will arrive so that they can tell their stories. And they are truly heartbreaking. Khalid told us the story of having been in his house. A tank arrived. Soldiers got down, ordered them out of the house. They had already had soldiers come to their house at least four times that year. And so it was not unusual for them to be ordered out of the house or, you know, inspected by the Israeli soldiers. So Khalid came out with his three daughters, and they were standing there being interrogated by these soldiers, not an unusual happening. But what was unusual was that then a sniper shot his two daughters, all three actually, 7, 4, and 2 years old. The 7-year-old survived and was evacuated to Belgium. He tried to get an ambulance. An ambulance came almost immediately. I'm a little bit emotional because I just heard this story. The ambulance arrived, and the soldiers would not let him put his children into the ambulance, and then ordered the ambulance driver out of the ambulance, told him to take off his uniform, and then they crushed the ambulance. They dragged it under a house, which they then later destroyed when they came through several days later. We just took photos of the ambulance crushed, and it's under a crushed house. These stories are horrible, and these people are living under, you know, a terrible, terrible oppression. They are so afraid that it's going to happen again. They have no reason to believe that they're protected in any way. They have no shelters. They have tents, and that's it. That's what they have to protect them. Or they've gone back, you know, into Gaza City and are living with in-laws, family members, cousins, whoever they can be with. The families are split up, but they don't want to leave their land. All of them have said, you know, they have nowhere to go. This is their land, and they'll stay even if they die. So I just needed to share that story with you, and I'm sorry if you had other questions you wanted to ask me.
Code Pink and Women for Peace also toured hospitals recently. Can you describe more about what you've learned as an organization and how you plan to proceed from here?
Well, what we've learned is that what has happened to the people of Gaza is unconscionable. The massive assault has destroyed so much of the infrastructure. In fact, you know, international organizations contributed to the building of a lot of the public sector buildings, and they're all destroyed. They're all destroyed. The siege has been going on for 20 months. Difficult to get medicines, difficult to get food, difficult for Gazans to go in and out, for Palestinians to come and visit their families. So they cannot get anything to begin reconstruction with. And it's just horrible. They're living in an open-air prison. Where do we go from here? I don't know. I want to throw myself at the front door of the White House and beg Obama to do something. These people are living under a terrible threat. They've lost so many of their loved ones. And there is nothing that tells them that anyone with the power to stop Israel is going to do that. So where do we go from here is every single door in the Senate and the House to try to get our Congress to understand the war crimes that have occurred in Gaza and to do everything we can to get the American people to realize that we are funding these war crimes, and they are war crimes. We've just heard that the Israeli government has officially said that they see no reason to investigate their military operations in Gaza. And that is so far from the truth. There is white phosphorus that was used on civilians. There is no question that 70% of the people killed, the 1,455, I think, is the number counted now, but people are still dying in the hospitals, and they're still finding bodies under the rubble. So they haven't finished counting the dead from the last assault. And, you know, it's a terrible situation. So we, as Americans, have a responsibility. This assault, in terms of what was rained down on the people so horribly, was made in the USA, a lot of it. And that's against U.S. law. If we don't believe in international law, at least let us abide by U.S. law, which is that we do not permit countries to use weapons we give them on civilian populations. 70% of the people killed were non-combatants. 40% of them were children and women.
What can listeners do now to support the effort to save civilians in Gaza?
They need to brief themselves about the details of the war crimes that are happening and that have happened and that will probably happen again if we in the United States as a government don't speak out strongly and tell Israel to stop. So what they need to do is inform themselves and in turn go directly to their members of Congress, you know, to their state senator, to their senators, and tell them they need to do something, that it is criminal and it is being done in our name with our tax dollars.
Code Pink's Gail Murphy speaking from Gaza. In the end, Israeli leaders blinked, giving in to growing pressure from Code Pink, Hollywood stars, and peace activists all over the world. They have allowed food aid into Gaza, but not until U.S. President Barack Obama apparently heard the call you heard Code Pink's Medea Benjamin make at the start of the show. President Obama finally joining his voice with others, complaining that Israel would not even allow vital food, the World Food Program's chickpeas, for example, into Gaza. Chickpeas are a Palestinian food staple used in hummus. On March 23rd, Western diplomats, speaking on condition of anonymity, said the office of Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert had informed Washington and Brussels that all types of food will now be allowed into the Gaza Strip. On the same day, Physicians for Human Rights Israel announced the release of a major new report charging the Israeli military with violations of medical ethics. The group cites the Israeli army for killing 16 medical workers and wounding 25 while they performed medical duties. The army also hit 34 medical facilities, 8 hospitals, and 26 primary care clinics.
Not only the Israeli army didn't evacuate the wounded, but it also prevented the Palestinian teams from reaching the wounded.
Ran Yaron, director of PHR Israel's Occupied Territories Department. The report is sure to cause a stir in Israel, where Israeli Defense Force soldiers have been admitting they were ordered to shoot unarmed civilians, even children.
That's it for Sprouts. Our music was by Michelle Schacht, Annie Lennox, Nazar Musa, and Fritz Heed. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast nationally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was Dory Smith, producer of Talk Nation Radio. I'm Emily Corwin of The Thought Spot. Talk Nation Radio and The Thought Spot are both produced at WHUS Radio, FM 91.7, a Pacifica affiliate in Storrs, Connecticut. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.